Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, hello, our unhinged friends. I'm Jenny, a reality TV producer in Los Angeles.
And I'm Sam, a psychotherapist in New York City. We're best friends and Bravo super fans.
And we're here to take you behind the scenes into the minds and lives of your favorite reality TV stars.
This is Unhinged.
And on camera.
Welcome back. We're our Darkness in the Valley episode. We were actually supposed to record this last weekend and I had to cancel because my child was sick and my husband was working 24 hours straight for some insane reason. And I think it was a little bit of a blessing because I think if we had recorded, I would have raged so hard, especially on the postpartum subjects that we went to discuss on the Valley. And so it's a blessing because my husband took the baby two nights in a row and I actually got some level of sleep this weekend. So I feel like I'm going to be way less rage induced and more like making sense.
Well, my husband needed to get himself a sandwich before watching the children for me while I did this. And so I'll bring the rage.
Well, there's going to be a lot of rage. And also it was our like 3-year wedding anniversary this weekend. But we had some deep talks about postpartum and how things like went. So some of that will probably, this might be like the most I talk about my personal life, but like it has to, because it's just really interesting watching this season of The Valley, because obviously people online are reacting pretty negatory towards it.
I think what's really interesting is we're getting two very different looks at postpartum journeys, right? Like looking at, and I feel like it kind of almost like is a transference of like our like different postpartum, like me and Jenny both got pregnant really around the same time. And we had this dream that we would have these like Gemini twins, only hers is a Gemini and mine is a Cancer.
Sensitive.
Yeah, boy. Sensitive. But we basically had babies 1 month apart. Got to be pregnant together very far away, which was really sad. But this is my second child and Jenny's first. So we're having like very different experiences in that way. And so I think it's interesting to be watching this play out on The Valley, seeing Kristen and Luke's experience as first time parents, then seeing Danny and Nia as fourth time parents?
100th time. It's interesting that you say it's very different because I actually wrote how similar it was, I thought. Because I also think it's really interesting how Nia's breastfeeding and Kristen's obviously zero judgment there. More of like, it's interesting how the baby is sort of attached to Nia and Kristen has a little bit more freedom, but at the same time, like, they still are struggling with the same things. Like I almost feel like when you leave the baby and like you don't have that attachment of like I have to breastfeed, sometimes that can be harder, I feel like. And I'm seeing that a little bit in Kristen. But anyways, I feel like yes, Nia's like a pro. You look at Nia showing up to scenes with like full makeup and like throwing the baby on the tit and like she's just going, and like Kristen's obviously struggling a lot more in the sense of this is her first time. But
right,
I don't know.
I think the difference is, or at least what I'm seeing the difference be, is not so much like about what's happening with the baby. It's like what's happening in their identities. Like I can see for Kristen, there's such like a deep, deep identity shift happening for her that is creating so much anxiety, so much confusion about herself, about her relationship. And like to me, none of this has to do with the babies or their interactions with the babies. It's all about where for Nia, I don't think it's creating, like, I feel like she is such a pro. She kind of like knows what she's doing. She knows who she is as a mom. She knows what it means for her relationship. And we're like, I think because they're postpartum, I think that's part of why a lot of their like mask, which I think it's really interesting that their mask is falling. Cause I remember after the first season, you really liked Danny and Nia. And I was like, yeah, I like them. And it feels like they're putting on some sort of like show for us. And so it's interesting to see like that start to fall down. And I think part of that falling down is like postpartum exhaustion and right. Like you can't pretend who you are during this period. It's so raw.
Yeah. It's interesting because, well, I would say on the men's side, I think what's a little depressing, and we'll get into the Danny and Nia of it all, obviously, but it's almost depressing. Like you see Luke really struggling also with his identity shift. And then you see Danny 4 under 4 and he seems like he's in the same place as Luke. I don't feel like he's accepted that he has these kids. And I don't know. It's funny. When I had the baby, you know, obviously you go get into the motherhood algorithm that I'm deep in. And like, I feel like when I first had the baby, there was so many Instagrams about like your whole life is going to change and who you are as a person. And like, there is something like fundamentally I like didn't really like about like you will become a different person, because for me, I always just try to think about life as like always evolving, always changing, always like trying to be a better person. But like also you change and evolve. And like I just didn't like this idea that like, oh, when you're a mother, you're just not like you anymore. You're new. And it took me a long time to obviously, you know, now I'm like basically at a year postpartum to like understand it. And I do. But at the same time, like there is something in me that still feels like you're the same person. Mm-hmm. Your priorities are just really changing, and that really changes who you are. And then the hormone shifts and all the things that come along with that, which, you know, really interesting to watch Kristen like vocalize that. And it's sad because I think the Valley has some serious fundamental problems. I also think right now people are really enjoying, or at least I am really enjoying watching like lighter shows. I think whenever Trump is president, like it's kind of like, let's make some fun stuff like a Ted Lasso. Like you kind of see the entertainment industry be influenced with this. Like nobody's
respond. Yeah.
Yeah. Like nobody's watching, like we're watching Friends and Neighbors on Apple, which is a drama, but like even that's kind of just about rich people doing dumb stuff. So,
okay, but I am watching The Testament, so.
Oh, God. Wow, that's a lot for you. I have a lot to say about that, but anyways. So, but yeah, I mean, there's something fundamentally, like, really compelling that they're showing this postpartum journey and, like, really putting words to a lot of things that, like, I had seen in media before I had kids. But at the same time, there is a true, like, darkness in the valley happening where I'm like, this show has serious fundamental problems. But let's start with Kristen and Luke, because they had a baby. They were together for a while, but they really like jumped into having a baby right away because Kristen really wanted one.
Well, and it took them a really long time. And as someone who went through, you know, some secondary infertility, when it takes a long time and you go through losses, that really impacts your parenthood journey too, because there is a point where you think like, this isn't going to happen for me. It does create a lot more anxiety during your pregnancy that makes it hard to be present and enjoy your pregnancy, and then can also contribute to postpartum anxiety, right? Like about your baby and about bad things happening. And so I really like think that's an important part of the journey that they had too. Like, I think they started actually pretty early in their relationship to have a baby. I think they weren't even living together yet when they kind of started, right? Last season, or maybe it was the season
they had
before.
Just moved in. I think they were living in that small apartment, and then they got that, like, rented that bigger house. He kind of was living in, I feel like he's from Indiana, but then he had like a weird mountain house in Denver with like no electricity. And like, he wants to be like a country guy. And then kind of, it seemed like they didn't say this, but it kind of seemed like for the show and for their career, they stayed in LA.
But also probably for Kristen, right? Like, that's Kristen's safety net. She knows it. She has friends there, you know, and as what we know about Kristen, like thinking about how she just like travels and is so anxious and erratic when she's away from her home, the idea of her moving out into the mountains in the middle of nowhere, I don't know if Luke even wants that. But in that, what we see is like Luke is giving up a lot of himself in order to maybe please Kristen.
I don't know. I don't have a lot of sympathy for Luke. Sorry. I'm going to really get in on Luke, but I will say, because I wanted to say this.
I have way more sympathy for Luke than Danny, but okay.
Oh, well, yeah, especially after last week's episode. I wanted to say this at the top, but like, I do really want to praise Nia and Kristen for even filming postpartum, both of their children around 3 months postpartum, like 3 months old. And to me, I just like have so much sympathy, and also like, it's so hard to watch at times because I feel like they were pushed in a way that like was too soon, especially I feel like for Kristen.
But yeah, isn't that enigmatic of like what the world is now? Like in New York, at least, where we have like one of the few states that has like a paid, you know, parental leave, you get 3 months. That's all you get. And then you got to go back to work. You got to strap on. And so I think it's actually, that makes it more raw and real for us, because I think that is what is expected. Like, you have your baby, 3 months in, you go back to work. And
oh yeah, I was working really 3 weeks postpartum and then back to work full time. I mean, I work from home, which makes it a lot easier, but like full time 6 to 8 weeks. I was full on back at at 8 weeks, and I was part time at 6 weeks. So, I mean, to me, it was not enough. I had a meeting with someone recently who had a baby, and I was like, oh, you know, congrats. Blah, blah, blah. And she was like, yeah,
it's not enough. We should all be in. Yeah, like, she was Europe, like, I was back at work. At least a year.
I know. She was like, I was back at work at like 2 weeks. And it's like, it's become almost like a badge of honor. And I was kind of like, wanted to be like,
good for you.
I was like, it's not good for you. It shouldn't be that way. We just don't have any.
I mean, I guess
systems.
Unless you want to, like, if you're a woman who, like, I mean, after a couple weeks is ready to get back to work and, like, you know, do you. And like, what I know for myself is I went back to work 3 months after my first child was born and went through really severe postpartum and all terrible things. And this time I got to spend 6 months off, which was such, like, still not enough, but like felt like such a privilege. And maybe that's like also a problem that I'm like, 6 months felt like glorious. And it's like, that's not how it should be. I shouldn't have felt like pressured to go back to work. I don't know, until I was ready. It's such a societal and United States issue.
I know. We just don't have systems and we don't have support. I have a friend who's pregnant now, and there's times where I'm like, he gots to woman up, you know? But at the same time, it's like, as women, we just have such complicated relationships with how we support each other, but also like our different journeys, because having a child and being pregnant is so different. But then also when your child is born, your child is so different and has different needs and wants. And like, for me, when I watch Kristen on this show, I see so much of myself. I'm probably going to cry. I don't know why. I'm just like, I see so much of
hormonal still.
I've been breastfeeding for a year, so the hormones are still full on. So yeah, I mean, I feel like she just looks so uncomfortable in her body, and you can tell she's just still carrying. And it's not weight. It's just the changes in her body. And like, it's just, I just felt so much of that up until really recently. I took out my like postpartum clothes and was shocked that some of them fit me. And then other ones I thought should fit me didn't, because it was just my body was different. Mm-hmm. And like, you can tell just as she's walking around and interacting with people, like that's a big part of it too. And like, yeah, I just give her so much like credit for filming, because I just think she was not. I don't think either of them were necessarily ready, and I don't think, but I think the fact that she wasn't ready and showed up and filmed, like, we get to see so much raw, real stuff, and it really made this season. So, I mean, Kristen's carrying this season to me.
Right, and that feels like the least, even though it's a difficult journey she's going through, and even with Luke, even though it's all, it doesn't feel dark. It feels like very real and raw. Like, that raw feels like the word that is really coming up for me around this, because we're like stripping Kristen down and just seeing what it's like when she is like uncomfortable in herself. And I'm thinking about like, when I, you know, when you think about Kristen, the first image that comes to my mind is her in the green dress going to Tom Sandoval's house with like all the confidence in the world, and like being like, I look so hot. I'm going in here to get my mail, and I'm going to make him like, this is my revenge moment. And wasn't quite that, but the confidence, right? Like the way that she felt like moving in the world and talking about herself and kind of standing in that. And to see her this season, like you're really getting to this like vulnerable part of her that isn't about like kind of this frantic, frenetic, like the when we see Kristen in her like anxious energy. It's the rawness and what it's like to, yeah, not feel connected to your body and not feel comfortable in your body, not feel comfortable in your group of friends that you used to feel so comfortable in, not feel comfortable in the place that you thought was your like safety net of like LA and right, like the life that she lived and having. And I guess that's what I mean about like this like identity change. It's not that like, yeah, at your core you change. It's like all these different parts of you just like are different now. And it's not that you're different. It's like your life is different. And like you said, your priorities are different. Where you feel comfortable is different. Your body is different. Your mind, like they say in motherhood, your whole brain changes.
When you see her wanting to kind of bring the old Kristen back, I thought that scene where she met up with Brittany and Jasmine and like ordered the martini, it was like, I need it. And like, you know, when she's at the park and she's like, Tom is like, what does she drink? Bourbon. And I was like, damn, like Kristen's still like doing it. And zero judgment again on anything that we have to say. I just, when I observed it, I was like, oh, Kristen really wants to go back to Kristen, but she isn't that person anymore. Like she can't like slam a martini and like relax and chill like she used to because she's still got the stress of the anxiety that she's probably thinking about with the baby. And what there's a lot I want to talk about, but I kind of wanted to zero in on that moment at the park, the like amusement park with Luke. And Luke is really like, I'm not in your body. I don't know. I'm not in your body. And she's having some postpartum like leakage. We don't really know the details of. But regardless, like she's like, I would rather just be at home, like with the baby. And all that was screaming in my head was like, go home and be with the baby. Like, this is like, I just felt so much, you know, I just couldn't believe that she was filming this much right after having the baby. And, you know, when she's like, I really just want to be in bed with the baby. And it was like, that's what you should be doing. That's what you should be allowed to be doing. There should be no pressure on you to do anything but that to me. But like with Luke, when he just kept saying like, I'm not in your body. I just felt like he does not seem capable or wanting to give her any of the support that she like actually needs. Because to me, it was very simple for him to be like, you don't feel good. This, you're not having fun. This isn't making you happy. The best thing for you to do is get in the car, you know, get changed, be with our child, rest and relax. You had some fun here. It was fine. You did more than you need to. Take care of yourself. I'm here. I'm going to get this food and then I will be home with you and I will help take care of you. Like, I just don't see Luke doing any of that.
So I kind of see it as like two things are happening at the same time. I totally agree with everything you said about Kristen, where it's like she's filming too soon. Her body, her mind, everything is going through too much. And her just wanting to be home with her baby in bed is so valid and so what she should do. I think for Luke, I guess I hold a little bit more empathy for him. Which is interesting because I feel like I am not holding this empathy for my husband. Whatever.
I know. I'm like, I'm kind of shocked because also like, I mean, we haven't even gotten into the sex of it all or like him wanting to go fishing or whatever the fuck that was. Or when she was like, you can go out, just like don't sleep on the couch and don't and help me in the morning. And he didn't do either of those. I like my husband has done so much of that shit. And all I could think when I was watching was like kill, 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 stab.
I definitely feel it felt kill, 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 stab towards the moment when she said that. But I think there's a part of this that like Luke's identity is changing too. And I feel a lot of empathy for that, that like hormonally for women, I think this change is so biological. And so as we're going through it, there is something like happening in our minds and in our bodies that's all interconnected. And for men, there's not a biological part of it. It really is just like this shift that they have to do in their brain, like that takes like more work because their body isn't doing it naturally. And so like, I kind of hold some like empathy that like he's younger too. And, you know, I don't know. And he moved to LA for her. Like there's so many shifts he's going through too, that I guess that's where I'm holding empathy. And I wonder if there is around the sex and that stuff. I want to talk about that separately because I think that is something similar but different.
Yeah.
But I think when it comes to what's happening for Kristen and her body, he doesn't know. That's totally true. And I wonder, because I feel like we're getting this edited version, I wonder if there's a part of him that maybe feels like he's getting mixed messages. Like she's wanting to show up in film, she's wanting to do her job. And so I wonder for him if he's like, you're saying you want to be home, but you're saying you want to do this show. And like, I don't know, like, I legitimately just don't know, like, how to help you, right? I don't know. Like, I wonder if she's not being clear about what she wants and kind of expecting him to intuit, and that there is for her this, like you said, she like wants to be old Kristen, but she also just wants to be home in bed with her baby. And it's valid for her to feel torn between those things. But I wonder if in that there's also this like ambivalent sort of thing that she's giving Luke around, like, I'm wanting to show up, I'm wanting to film, I'm wanting to do my job, I'm wanting to like still be reality star Kristen, and I don't feel comfortable in my body, and I want to be home, and I don't know what to do, and I'm leaking. And so I guess that's where I hold empathy for what was happening. I feel like there's a part of Luke that doesn't know what she wants and doesn't know if he should be supporting her to stay or supporting her to leave.
So, I guess
that's
totally
what I'm holding.
I totally agree with you, and I picked up on that too. And I do think that was probably what was happening. I think what frustrates me is like men want this leadership role. This is more of a bigger picture cultural thing that I feel like I'm commenting on here, but like
men. I want to be clear, some men.
Well, I think in general, I mean, like they feel
not in my house,
but I feel like, and not to get ultra specific here, but I feel like your husband wants to feel valuable. And maybe that's not leadership or like I'm owning whatever, but like, I feel like men seem to want that, but then because women have sort of, you know, taken more of a role in society. That's why they're trying to like testament us and Handmaid's Tale us these days. But like, I feel like this is the time that you have a leadership role, and like you need to be able to take care of your partner in a way that they can't. And to me, I've had similar situations like with my husband where I'm like, just make the decision for me. Like, just do it. And like, why does this all have to be on me? And I feel like in that moment, like Kristen really needed Luke to make the decision for her.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she was being like that. But then Luke needs to like put what's best for Kristen, because Kristen can't.
Mm-hmm.
I did think, kind of jumping ahead, that moment with Zach being like, you're a good dad, like you're good at what you're, you know. And then he was like, that's so validating. And I think it's really hard because I think men do, I don't know. I hold empathy, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, man the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Like, get it to fucking together. Because women go through
with
so
that too.
Much shit.
Like, I think both of those things are true too. I think that like, he doesn't know how to man the fuck up and how to like make decisions for her because he doesn't really know what she wants or what she needs. And there's a part of like, if you're gonna have a baby, do some fucking research and find out what postpartum is like. They do the research on like what it means to take care of the baby and what it means when the wife is pregnant, but there's so little information out there for men about like what your wife is going through postpartum. And there is no motivation, I think, because societal devalues women and devalues women's health, that there isn't like any push for like men understand what you like. They're like, okay, if she has a C-section, it's surgery, so she may need to like rest and be in bed, and so I'll have to take care of the baby. But there's no talk about what it's like. They're like, okay, you're out of the fourth trimester, you should be fine now. It's the postpartum period lasts the first like technically year, but I would say 3 years. I would say my body, my mind, my like everything did not start to settle until my kid was about 3 years old.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I feel like I'm in a year and like I'm probably probably 50% there, but I don't feel like even close to 100. But like, yeah, no, that was.
But there's no information for partners about like, how do I support my partner through it? And so this idea that he's just going to get it is like not totally fair to him either, because he doesn't live in a world or society that like would let him know that that's something that he
ChatGPT, come on, get your fucking shit together. I mean, this is a conversation I had with my husband very recently where I said I just don't feel like there's an effort. I mean, there's not even an effort in some ways to like Google or figure out things that happen with our child. Like, he goes way more off instinct, and I'm like, you could read a fucking book. But I was like, you really put no effort into like getting to know the things that I'm going through. And, you know, he was not in a bad way, but really supported me and kind of pushed me to do the breastfeeding. And then I'm kind of like, well, you should realize it's like, you know, he comes from a very different culture. His mom had his kids at 16 and breastfed all the kids. And that was her only, and I don't mean this in any like bad way, but like her only purpose of life was just to produce children. And that's just very different from my life. And he knows that. But also it's like, read a fucking book, like get a fucking book. Like my friend, like I said, who is pregnant, her husband's like the fucking best. And he's like, yeah, I'm reading a book about like how to support your wife when she's pregnant. And so she might be horny or she might not want sex at all. And this is how you deal with that. And he's like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, well, that's the thing. You kind of have to like, you know, obviously every person just has such a different journey. But
I guess that's where I'm like holding empathy, because I feel like my husband is really, really good at like, wanted like letting me take the lead and letting me let him know what I can and can't do. And but he's you know, I think all men are mildly like neurodivergent, and so it can be
or foreign, apparently.
They're either foreign or neurodivergent, and I think part of that neurodivergence is really hard for them to like intuit what women like if we're not clear with them, they can have a hard time. And I have two boys. I think they're probably likely going to be somewhat neurodivergent as well. And I just think it's hard for them to really like step into, and maybe it's like a hormonal thing too. Like, they don't produce as much oxytocin as women. They don't even have the hormones that allow like, there is like a difference in, I don't know what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah,
I'm not
no,
a doctor,
it's
but
funny
like,
because even when you have the baby, and this is probably something Kristen and Luke are going through too, they don't really like pick up the signals. I remember when I had the baby, I was in a mommy me group, and I was like, I don't know like what I'm doing. And the like little facilitator was like, you just have to like, you start watching, observing, and like you get the signals and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't like know what she's talking about. And now at a year, I'm like, yeah, we were at his mom's yesterday, and the baby, like, I knew the baby, like, it was nap time. Like, we don't have set nap times because our child, like, sleeps like a maniac. But I was like, I know this is, like, getting to the time where he has to go to sleep. And then, like, his mom's cooking dinner or lunch, and it's, like, a whole freaking thing. And I'm like, we got to go home so the baby can, like, sleep. And he's like, my husband's like, could have been in fucking La La Land. No idea. And then it got to the point where the baby's hysterical, trying to nurse, won't go to sleep because we're not in our own house. And yeah, we had to pull the baby and drive the baby home like completely hysterical, basically, because we just missed the cues. And I knew we were missing the cues, you know? So it's like, it goes on from like pregnancy, your own postpartum, into the baby, because everything's connected. And I feel like that's also why I feel like it's so interesting watching Kristen and Nia, because Nia's breastfeeding, so she has to be with the baby every 2 hours, which plays into the conflict that happens with Danny that we'll get into. But like, Kristen obviously has a little bit more freedom, and you would think, okay, she's more free. I actually see that she's really struggling with that. Like, I almost feel like if she had to be physically with the baby, she would be less stressed. Mm-hmm. Because also, not because I think she should be breastfeeding, I'm just saying, I feel like Nia almost has that built-in excuse where Kristen like is like, you could leave the baby at home and go to this park. And it's like, but biologically we are wired to have to be with our child, and that calms you down. And so to me, a lot of my struggle in general with like parenting is like, we have all these biological things that we need, that's built into the system, right, of making a human. But modern life and modern society negate, like it fights against so many of those things. And so you have to just constantly be making choices of like what's best for your child, but also like what's biologically supposed to happen versus like I have to go to work, I have to sleep at night, I have to fucking like operate, like you know. And it's interesting to just watch that, I guess, kind of like play out, because at that park I did feel like she was like, I just want to be with my child, you know.
Well, as someone who didn't breastfeed their first child after 4 months, I think that like there is a freedom to it, but like also not, like you still like, even if you're not breastfeeding, you still feel like, I remember when we first had a nanny, and it was very important for me to put my second child into daycare right away, because with the first it was during the pandemic, so we got a nanny who came part-time, and that was like a shit show because my schedule was so insane because we couldn't afford a full-time nanny. But she would be in the other room with him, feeding him while I was working. And I'm trying to do a session with someone, hearing my baby cry. And just because I wasn't breastfeeding, like all of my signals were still going off that like, I need to go and comfort my baby. I need to, like, it hijacks your whole system to hear or think like any little noise he made. Even when he was happy in the other room, it would like hijack my body that like, oh, she's getting to be with him while he's smiling, while he's doing these things. And so it like breastfeeding isn't like necessarily the thing that like connects you to it. It's like ever, like you just as a mom, your whole system feels it and wants to like be there. And the second you're away, you feel like you're missing out on something important, even if it's like not really important, right? Like there's no milestone happening, but just like missing out on being the one to soothe, to cuddle, to snuggle. And especially in those early months, it's like I'm thinking about that first time she went out to drinks with Brittany and Jasmine, or
and
she just started crying. And I remembered my first time going out after I had my second child. We went to Soft Bar to see Carl, and it was so fun, but the whole time I was like, I need to go home. I need to be with my baby. And it's just in the back of your head, this feeling of like, it doesn't feel natural to be out here, even though I'm with people I love in an environment that's like fun and cool. And it's so unnatural to be away from your baby in those early months.
It's interesting. And yeah.
The family first culture, like we're in the family first regime. That's not how they're setting up life for us. Like,
oh my God, no. No, it's funny. Your description of the nanny experience is exactly my experience of the nanny experience. But yeah, my first going out was, I'm a big My Morning Jacket fan, and I had bought these concert tickets, and I was like, by then I'll be totally, and it's around the same time that Kristen's now filming, like 3 months postpartum. And the anxiety I felt, there was the concert stage, and there was happened to be a clock that you could see right behind where they were playing. And I just stared at the clock the whole time and just was like, how soon can I leave? It was the most stressed I've ever like been doing something I enjoy. And then my mommy,
it's so real.
Yeah. Like people were like, I don't enjoy the same things. And I'm seeing that in Kristen. Oh my gosh. When she was at that lunch scene with Jasmine and, Brittany, I sobbed. Like I literally had to pause my peacock and cry, because it was just so real. Like I just felt it physically.
Hey y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
But yeah, I mean, let's get into the sex. I mean, because Luke was on Watch What Happens Live, Danny bailed. So it was Tom Schwartz. And Luke was on it, and they asked, do you regret demanding it so much?
I didn't watch it. What did he say?
Oh my God, the answer was unbelievable. He goes,
so any empathy I had for Luke is about to go out the window.
No, I mean, they were like, do you regret it? And he was like, yeah. And then they're like, was it better? And then he was like, well, I still want more sex.
So
it was such a non-apology. It was so like, the audience wants me to say yes, so I'll say it. Like, I don't know. I just didn't. It was
well,
kind
I think
of
there's
pathetic.
Something to be said about, like, it is okay to want more sex postpartum from your wife. It's okay to want it. It's not okay to verbalize it. Like,
that's
I am sure
like,
my husband is thinking all of those things that Luke is thinking, but knows better than to ever fucking say them.
That's what I'm saying. Like, a part of me, with all of this men, all of these men in the valley, I just am like, shut the fuck.
Well, and I really like the idea, and I think it could have been that if Luke was like maybe more. I feel like Luke is really immature. I don't know why he presents to me as like 25 years old. Like, he just seems like such like a young boy to me. But maybe that's also just like the way he behaves. And I don't know. That's interesting. It makes me think about like Kristen and when she dated James, and like there's something about her that like wants to seek and like this like young boy energy.
Well, and she kind of, it's like the same as what we talk about with Sarah, where it's sort of like you manifest your worst fear, because, you know, she talks about she felt like Luke was gonna leave her, and you know, she's experienced that before, and it's like, well, that's what happens when you have immature man boys. I think Luke kind of vocalizing, he's the most, in some ways he does remind me of my husband, because I do think he thinks Kristen and the baby is the most important thing to him, and he does. But at the same time, he sort of wants to run away because there's a part of him that is deeply kind of selfish in all of this. And, like, I think that does have to do with the identity shift. I think Zach wasn't such a good friend to Luke in that moment, like, and said, you're a good dad. And he was like, that's all I need. And I think, again, as we talk about men and why they're truly broken, you really see how men, almost in a way, just as much, if not more, than women, need the support system of other men. And, like, there's just no infrastructure. Like, I remember there was a dad and me group that I was, like, trying to get my husband to. And he was like, I'm not working. I just, like, I need to focus on other things right now. But I, like, kind of wish he had gone, because it's, like, like when you say there's no information, it's like it would be really helpful for men who just have babies to kind of go to a place, so
where it can be normalized. It's like,
yeah,
like I wonder for him if he's like, well, is it me, is it like, right, like, is there something, because he's showing up being like, I'm saying I love your body, like, why isn't that enough? Because probably in the past that was enough.
Well, also, like, I always say in work life, you never complain down, you always complain up. Like, you never complain to your underlings, you complain to your boss. Because your underlings always have it worse than you. They're making less, they're working more, maybe, whatever.
I like that.
You have, I mean, 99% of bosses don't do this, but it was something I always felt was super important whenever I was in a position of supervising people, was like, I complain up, I try not to complain down. And I feel like with postpartum or whatever, with men, it's like, you can complain, sure, because you've also lost your identity. You're also, everything is changing. It's happening for you overnight, where women had like all these physical things that contributed to it. And yeah, but like, you never complain down. Like, whatever you're going through, the woman is going through 100 times worse than you. So, like, fuck you, shut up. Like, but
totally.
But also, it's like, sometimes my husband, I remember when he first like was dropping the baby off at daycare, he's like, it's just really hard, and he cries. And I was like, already feeling so much guilt about going back to work and having to like do this in the first place. I was like, why? I don't want to hear this. This is like not what I want to fucking hear. Like, I asked you to drop him off because it's the one fucking thing you have to do. Like, and then he's like, I'm just expressing myself. And I'm like, okay, but like, can you express yourself to
somebody else? And like, I really like that, like, when Luke was like talking to Jesse and talking to Tom, like, and it's interesting that Tom, I feel like, gave him the best advice, because Tom doesn't have children, and I have a lot of negative feelings about Tom Schwartz, and have some things to say about him dating much younger women, but we can get to that if we have time. But I think that was like healthy, like, go to the men in your life and talk to them, get it out there. Because I think there is a conversation he can have with Kristen about their sex life that isn't like, I'm expecting sex, or isn't like, I'm upset that we're not having sex. Like, I think it is important for couples to talk about sex. I know me and my husband talk about how sex changed after having children, and how that affects both of us, you know?
Yeah.
And but not doing it in a way where it's like, you're complaining to me that I'm not up for
giving
sex. Like,
I mean, yeah. And I still, and we talked about this before, but the therapist being like, it's 5 minutes.
Yeah. So,
I mean, especially when she starts talking about the
first
physical
of all,
pain.
What I want to say is, I want to be mindful that I don't know that that's what the therapist said. Like, for me, I think about the things that I said and I'll check in with clients and they'll be like, I hate what you said last week. And they come back with what they think I've said. And it's like, oh, OK, that's because you took some information that I said and you sort of distorted it based on like whatever your history of distorting things. So I don't know that though, if that is what the therapist said, that therapist needs to maybe like consider if that's like the right career for them or if they should be working with women.
But my
guess
on national television now, so
I imagine, and maybe I should submit the question on Watch What Happens Live, like, what did your therapist say to you, Kristen, after they saw that? Because I would hope the therapist would be like, oh, like, let's talk about what maybe happened in that session because something got misunderstood. Because yeah, that's so painful that Kristen would think that it's as a therapist, it was just really painful to hear that. But also what came to me was the idea of like, okay, what is happening for her? There's something in her that feels like I need to be, as a woman, I should just be able to do this for 10 minutes. Like, I should just be able to like show up and be objectified and do the thing.
Dissociate. That's
right.
Sick.
And like,
that's
please,
twisted.
My man. And oh, Kristen, baby, please. No,
don't
you
do
not
that.
Need, if you never want to have sex again, that's totally your prerogative. And like, yeah. I didn't feel so much pain for Kristen around that.
Everything, Kristen is getting like run over by a truck this season.
Yeah.
When she needs like so much more like love. Like, even I remember Beach therapist was talking about that lunch with Jasmine Brittany. They were like, I wish they had been more validating for her instead of being like, it's just drink your drink and you'll be fine and get over it. And I'm like, I get it, though. I mean, I get that their reaction was trying to just soothe her in a way. But yeah, I just think she deserved more. I mean, let's just dive into Nia and Danny, because
we'll
never get to it.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like I hold so much empathy for Luke because of how terrible Danny is. Like, I see other end of it and I'm like, well, Luke is trying.
He is trying. And I thought
Danny's not even fucking trying.
I know. Yeah. And I mean, on your fourth kid, you're still fucking like this. It's fucking ridiculous. I mean, yeah, they had a really good conversation at the house after that park, Luke and Kristen. So I feel like they were kind of on a road to repair and like they'll probably have more of that and is what it is.
I feel like they can get to a good space. And I do feel like Luke has the capacity for something there to show up in the way that you were kind of describing how she needs. But I just think he needs a little more like help getting there. And yeah, I really love that, like, they had that hammock repair moment. Like, that was beautiful.
Yeah. And like the conversation I had with my husband recently, we were talking about having another kid and I was just like, I don't know. And then he was like, I'm realizing that I don't know how to help you postpartum in the way that you need. And he was like, and that's something I really need to work on. And I think even just that acknowledgement was kind of like,
totally. It's
huge.
Such a big deal.
Like, sometimes it's like, oh, you kind of need.
9 times out of 10, we just need validation. We just need to be validated and told our experience is real. And we don't even need a solution most of the time. Like, I don't think in that moment he even needed her to be like, go home and be with the baby. I think she just needed to be, he needed to be like, I don't know how to help you because I know you're going through so much more than me.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That is true. I mean, I wish he had done. I mean, just
like, he kind of ended up making it more about himself. Like, I don't know how to help you because I don't know what it's like to be in your body.
It's the repeating of it was just, I don't know what he was thinking with that fucking line. But Danny, that fucking demon.
Danny.
So yeah, I mean,
and I hate that Danny is giving Lala a moment.
Like, oh God, I know, and she does deserve the moment. But I mean, the thing that sucks is like, I always felt. I like Nia and Danny, but mostly because I like Nia. Let's just be clear. But I also kind of am starting to not like Nia in the way that I think she sort of...
she protects Danny.
She's becoming one of those women who sort of is a put up, shut up.
Yeah. I feel like she has always maybe been. She has these like small moments where it feels like she stands up to him. But overall, she engages in like what they call the fawn response, which is part of that like anxiety, fight, flight freeze, where instead of like fighting or flighting, you do this like appease or like people pleasing thing in order to like avoid conflict or abuse or rejection, or in order to avoid something like bad from happening.
Well, and you see her do that to
Danny almost every time. Yeah, it totally makes sense in her childhood. It also makes sense in the context of like pageantry life, right? Like,
oh yeah,
women aren't allowed to like have a voice there, right? You're supposed to be smile, happy, right?
A slam pig.
You are a slam. No,
sorry, I had to throw it in. I had to do it.
I don't know if that's the correct usage of it, and I only want to use slam pig appropriately. Properly.
Miss Slam Pig United States.
But I feel like, I don't know, we just, in my book group, we just read this book yesteryear, which is, they're going to make a movie out of it.
I'm shocked you have time to read a book.
I listened to it on audio tape.
I was going to say, what the fuck?
At 1.4 speed. but it's about this woman who's like a trad wife influencer and wakes up and she is like back in time in like the 1800s and having to actually live like a trad wife life without.
Oh, I've heard of this book. Okay.
And it's got a really good twist. You should read it. It's actually really good. They're going to make a movie out of it. So you could also just see the movie.
Interesting.
But I feel like Nia very much reminds me of, both of them remind me of the couple. And I think it's based kind of loosely based off of the ballerina farm lady. I feel like Nia reminds me of this woman because she's clearly like a little bit conflicted about like being this like traditional, very religious woman. But also like, I think when you become an influencer, you're automatically kind of like finding your voice and no longer in that traditional, or it kind of reminds me of the overall trajectory of housewives who like come on the housewives as like kind of voiceless women in these terrible marriages and then use the show to like find their voice and leave their marriage.
Which I don't think Nia's there. I don't think Nia's.
Well, I almost feel like
may ever be there.
I feel like coming on the show is, we see her trying to find her voice in some moments and then fall like the conflict, we're like watching it play out in the most extreme moment. And I think what's making it harder for Nia than a lot of the housewives to find their voice is that the show is more about couples than just about her. And it makes me wonder if she had been on like a housewife show, if that would have been an easier trajectory for her to like get out of this situation, because so much of it feels so rooted in whatever. I know they're like big church people. It feels rooted in religion and in this like guise that like religion tells you how to be, and therefore we have to like play these traditional roles, and yet we're on this show with these other people who are not living like that.
You know, and I want to say something about that, because I know that's like what everyone's talking about, and I don't deny that. I think that's very fair. However, it's like another thing with like talking about Craig maybe or maybe not being MAGA. Like, I want to just take a step back and say, like, what do we actually see? Because me personally, I don't feel like, A, if I had seen this last season, I wouldn't have liked them. But I don't see Danny being like, I'm head of the household, like decisions need to be made through me, blah, blah, blah. I don't feel like I've always seen that. Like, I think in the beginning, Nia was making them live in that shitty small apartment and was like, I don't want to move to Santa Clarita, blah, blah, blah. I feel like I've at times seen them have to compromise, but I haven't seen like the way, I'm just saying the way that it's being described on social media as they're in this kind of like religious cult and trad wife and he has to be this way and she has to be that way. There are things I see and I want to get into that, but I don't see Danny necessarily treating her that way. And maybe that's a little bit more stereotypical on me. What I do see, and this is what I want to say, is I want to say that I feel like Danny, there's something truly broken in him. But what I see is like that I think in his mind, he thought, okay, I'm going to have the perfect pageant girl wife. I'm going to have my perfect four children under four. I'm going to have my perfect Santa Clarita mansion and I'm going to live this perfect life. And there's something in him that's still deeply unhappy that he can't acknowledge or work through or think about, even though he has this perfect life that he's made with this perfect wife that's now putting on a mask and fawning and doing everything to make him happy. And he drinks and that comes out in very destructive ways. But I don't, I mean, all the religious stuff, I'm sure, plays into it.
Okay, I agree with,
I haven't seen it on the show.
So I agree with a lot of what you're saying. What I think is happening is, I think we've seen shades of it happening on the show since the beginning, but I think as the show has progressed, it's gotten more extreme. And I think last season was the big shift to it becoming more extreme. The exposure of his kind of like sexual harassment, sexual misconduct with Jasmine and her partner, I think shifted something for him to go more extremely into that mode. But I think we see it a lot last season in the way that she like defends him and like, right, stand by your man. Don't like, don't question him, stand by him. And I think there was like a little bit of her like trying to be like, Daniel, you can't do those things. But there's still so much of her standing up to him within like a fawn response, within like a people pleasing response. And so I think we saw shades of it. And since, if I'm kind of like connecting it to the trajectory of like housewives leaving their marriages because they finally have a voice and a place, it's almost like Danny had to get more extreme in those views and in that way of being because Nia was finding her voice on the show. And so he needed to like make sure he like tamped down that voice. And so I think we're seeing him get more extreme. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, he wants this like perfect life. He wants this picture perfect way of being. And yet he's so deeply unhappy because you don't drink to the point that he drinks.
I guess I agree with everything you're saying. I think for me, I'm just like, this narrative of like, you know, they put God first in their relationship, or this idea of being Christian or whatever. I get it. It's very polarizing right now. But to me, I just don't like labeling like, oh, that's why they're fucked up. Like, to me, I think you can have, I think if you have God first in your relationship, that could be really good if you follow a way of Jesus thinking of forgiveness, of being kind and loving to your partner. Like, there's so many great ways of like,
but that's not like the evangelical way, right? Like, the evangelical way is not actually.
I guess I'm just saying, I just hate that that's always got to be the narrative. And I think it's more interesting to kind of get into what we actually see, which is the really fucked up dynamic of their relationship.
But
because we don't know that much about their
relationship. I actually don't think you can separate it, because I feel like in that first season when I saw them, the way they would talk about God and their picture perfect life felt like that was part of how they came up with this idea of perfection, was through this like religious orientation and this religious narrative of like perfection. And I think that relates to like sort of like what the trad wives are doing, like the influencers of like, we're going to put out this picture of things being perfect when behind the scenes, when the door is closed, like things are not that. And so it's hard for me at least to see how those things are dispersed, like they feel so interconnected in how those communities, and I would be curious to like go to church with them and see what their church community is like and see what their life is like outside of this group of friends, because it feels like they are so different than everyone else in the group.
Well,
and part
and
of that feels like connected to them being these deeply religious people.
I think he's just being an asshole, religious or no religious, to be totally honest.
But I think the context of the way religion can empower men to engage in these patriarchal roles that allow them to be assholes and behave in a certain way, and the wife is not, like, we're seeing them play out that dynamic that gets narrated through more extreme versions of religion.
But I feel like if they weren't religious, we're seeing a more extreme version of Luke and Kristen at the same time. In fairness,
Danny would behave the way he would if he was not religious? Yes. Do I think religion likely plays a role in the way that Nia behaves? Yes. I think there's something about what she's internalized around religion and women's traditional roles that engages her in this like fawn response, in sort of being more pacified to Danny's behavior. Like, yeah, like even the way like she speaks, like there's sort of a, like, I need to be quiet, I need to be small. And I 100% think that's related to religion.
I agree with that. I think I agree with that way more than kind of everyone I mean, and I'm not sticking up for Danny, let's just be clear. It was very interesting when they were sitting at the table this week in the second part of his fucking drag queen meltdown, where he was like, "You're yelling now." And she was like, not yelling at all to him, considering how he was fucking yelling at everyone. I always felt like,
well,
Janet,
I think he has co-opted religion to use in his form of way, the way he engages in abuse and control. Do I think he probably would be like an asshole and borderline abusive and controlling in a relationship without religion? Yes, but it might come out more like that.
I've had men speak to me like that who were not in any way religious. That's why I just feel like the whole religion part is like, it's fine, but I just see this as just male behavior, to be totally honest.
Dark.
Yeah, I mean, it is dark, but that's kind of why I kind of want to take religion out of it, because I'm like, don't make that the fucking excuse, because I see plenty of men act like this and have nothing to do with religion.
But I don't know, it just, because if we have a good comparison here of him and Jax, and we see Jax, like, he's just villain, where Danny's like, villain, but I'm going to put a smile and a joke on it, which feels, I don't know, something about that feels like the way I, like, see weird. Maybe it is just like the time we're in that it feels.
And that's what I don't like.
It's hard to intersperse those things.
Yeah. And that's why I want to give it separation, because
I don't know.
I do find it very interesting.
I want it to be interconnected, I guess, because I really see how religion gets co-opted in the greater sense. And like we were talking about, like this family first narrative, we care about children, we love children, but we're going to take away Medicaid and we're going to put brown children in cages. Like,
I mean, no.
I guess I need it to be exposed that religion is a problem.
I know. Yeah. I mean, you're definitely on that train.
But do I think that religion can provide like something good? Yeah. Like, I can see that.
I think it's a huge thing missing in our modern world sometimes.
But I also don't think you need religion to have empathy.
Of course not. Of course not. It's just more of teachings. You know, it's the same as reading like Aesop's Fables to me. But like, regardless, I'm not a Christian. So let's just make that clear. I'm just saying with
Jenny, are you turning evangelical?
No. But I always felt like Janet went about it the wrong fucking way. And like,
right. I don't like this narrative that like Janet was right. It's like, okay. No. We all sense that Danny was not a good guy last season. No, like, was that not like clear? Like, was there not like some like, ooh, like Dan, like something's going on there? I think the problem is Janet wants to like fight a battle and speak up in a way that there isn't. It's weaponized, right? Like she's weaponizing something and not necessarily doing it from a place of like, let's protect Nia, let's protect women. It's sort of like, I'm going to do this because then it makes me like this moral authority in the group. And like, no one likes someone who comes in to be the moral ones.
They're pushing the whole narrative. And this is the thing, the whole narrative of the religious, I would be very interested. You're right. If we saw their church community, if we understood, like they go to Hillsdale, whatever, with Justin Bieber, like if we understood and we saw more of that story, I'm interested. I guess sometimes I feel like the Bravo community puts a narrative that we don't see on the show onto things. And I'm like, that's fair and whatever, because you just need something to talk about. But like, it's also kind of like, well, we should see it in the show. And I wish producers, like when we talk about, well, which we'll get into the end, why the show is truly like fucked up and broken. Like producers should be seeing that and saying, we got to film a scene with them at their church with their friends, mm-hmm, or mm-hmm, understanding their religious aspect, because this is something everyone's fixated on. And we're right, not seeing any of that on the show.
Oh,
and
I kind of agree
everyone's
with
that. Talking about.
Yeah.
Even in the last scene with Lala and Bo, I see them as someone who's really rooted in their faith. And it's like, okay, but we don't see them. We see them hanging out with a bunch of fucking degenerates.
Right. And getting drunk. And
yeah.
So
it's like, and with Danny and his drinking, which I want to hear your take on. We've talked about this in the past, the party demon. I think Danny,
dark,
I don't know if Danny, I don't know if Danny is an alcoholic. I don't even know if that labeling fully makes sense anymore, because I think there's just so many levels to it. I think he is a party demon, but I think his party demon is very much rooted in the unhappiness of his life and his feelings that he doesn't know how to express, because most men aren't really taught how to express their emotions. And it just comes out in like a really toxic way.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
I would be cautious to label anyone that I don't know an alcoholic. I do think on the show, what we see is a really unhealthy relationship with alcohol, that when he drinks to a point that he no longer has, and I don't even know if it's not control, but if he no longer has the ability to, like, control how he behaves, and therefore he's behaving in ways that, like, don't align with the perfectionist persona. And so that's something he should look at. Like, if I want to be this perfect family, then, like, I can't get drunk and go grab women's butts. Like, that's right. Like, if that's really, like, what I value is being a father and being the man of the family, then I shouldn't be getting drunk and yelling at my wife. And so there's clearly something that happens when he gets drunk that he's no longer able to live by what he says his values are. And that's something he should look at really critically if he, like, cares to live. If he's saying, I'm a religious person and religious people want to live by values, like, then yeah, like, that should be something he is willing to look at. And I think there is, like, a darkness in him that he can only let out truly when he is drunk. And that's something I think he should do some therapy around. Like, what do I, like, there is a darkness in me that I need to figure out what to do with and how to engage with it in a healthy way so that I'm not letting it out on my wife or other unsuspecting women. So yeah, I guess I agree. I think he has a party demon that comes out, but I think that demon is like a darkness in him that, I don't know, I guess I'd be curious, like, where that darkness comes from, what it is. But we all have a darkness, right? We just find ways to cope or to let that darkness out that aren't harmful to ourselves or other people. I do it through Lexapro.
I do it with my Christian religion. No.
Jenny does it with God now.
to me, Lala's moment was fucking great, unfortunately.
It was, yeah, it was.
Like, every aspect of it.
And she was kind of a good one. Like, I have a very complicated relationship where I don't love Lala. But I did love that moment for her, and it was well-earned. And I do think she handled it really well.
Even her telling him, like, you kind of have an alcohol problem, the way she handled it. And then the fact that he was like, she doesn't know me to say
well,
that.
Well, if anyone's going to tell him he has an alcohol problem, it should be the person, like,
I know,
in
and
recovery.
To me, when he responded,
like,
when
other people are drunk and then saying someone else is an alcoholic, it's like pot kettle. Like, I don't know that, like, you, like, if you drink, don't assess someone else's drinking. But because Lala has done some work, it feels like it does come from less of a.
I mean, his response was just fucking terrible. The fact that he was like, she doesn't know me. It just, to me, it was like, that was fucking clear you have a problem. And not only do you have a problem, but you basically validated everything that Lala says, that shit's way worse behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. And you need to get the fucking shit together. And I don't know about why he didn't show up to Watch What Happens Live, but I hope the reunion's brutal for him. So getting into the other characters, I mean,
let's talk about Jesse, because does Jesse have humiliation kink?
Yeah, and I'm, like, interested in that. I look, Jesse is actually the one who came back, and I'm the most interested. I kind of wish Michelle wasn't there. I feel like Michelle's holding him back in a way. Like, I'd rather see Lacey and Jesse being more prominent this season and Michelle kind of more in the background.
I guess she creates some tension there, so that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Like, natural tension that's not, like, so forced, or maybe it is forced. I don't know.
It kind of feels forced. Why would you be on vacation with your ex-husband? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because, like, the city premiered and it's kind of like the East Coast version of the Valley, and, like, it really does work best when it's formed on, like, couples or people who have kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Lindsay obviously makes a lot of sense on that show, even though she doesn't have a relationship right now. Whereas, like, how is it going to be with Kyle and Amanda now that they're broken up? I don't know. But like, that's kind of how Jesse and Michelle feel. I'm like, why are you guys like, she clearly just hates him so much. Like, she would never be doing this if it wasn't for the show. So it's just like, mm-hmm. why is this happening? Lacey's really interesting. I like how she challenges him. I like, and I think probably for Michelle, seeing that probably makes her more bitter, because she was probably more of the Nia fawning. And she's like, shit, now he's with someone who's even stronger than me. And like,
and was she fawning though? Because I remember that like first season, it did seem like she was just as like mean to him. Like he was always like desperate to like get her attention. And she was always kind of like emotionally checked out and like didn't, I don't know. I feel like he made the humiliation fetish. And just so everyone knows, a humiliation fetish is when a person finds consensual embarrassment, teasing, degradation, or loss of status sexually or emotionally exciting. And like, I feel like when we were at that table with him and Lacey, like, I was like, ooh, we are in some humiliation fetish. Like, she is like enjoying like tearing him down. And he seems like he's getting hard on it too.
I hope that's true. And I want to see more of it. Same. That would actually make me more interested to watch the show.
Yeah.
Is Michelle bringing anything? No. Is
like
my
watching
answer
her and Tom Schwartz flirt felt like when we watched Tom and Raquel flirt. Like it felt like we were just like the same thing. It felt so forced and it felt so fake.
I mean, the one scene with his girlfriend was, I don't understand the Lala and the Schwartz being full time. It made no, I mean, full time,
okay,
or no time.
What do you think of Schwartz dating younger women? Because the girl before this, and he does the same sort of like love bombing thing where he's like, she's so special. Because I remember when he was on Nick Vile, I didn't listen to it. There were like clips of it with that first girl he got with after
he
Katie.
Loved her so much too. Yeah.
And he was like, I love her. She's so special. And she was super young. And she's like, she's got an old soul. And I don't know, there's something that is concerning for me about Schwartz kind of going after these much younger girls. And then like, it, I don't want to say predatory because they're old enough to consent, but not old enough that their brains are fully developed. And so the fact
well,
that
isn't
saying,
she like 28
like,
or something? I thought she was younger than that.
I think she's 26.
Interesting. My interpretation, because I met him.
Yeah.
I just feel like he is mentally that age.
Well, and I think there's something for him about a younger girl that like is not going to like put the same pressure or scrutiny or expectation.
27.
Or...
She's 27 now.
Now.
Yeah.
This was filmed probably like a year ago.
Yeah, it was because it was last summer. So she was 26. Yeah.
So like just her brain just fully developed like yesterday, you know, like there's something for him about finding these younger girls that like. And then doing this thing where he like kind of like loves bomb them, so special. I love them so much. Like getting tattoos of them. I don't. To me, there's
something
it's pretty
weird
really
that he
concerning
says, yeah.
about the way he behaves and with these younger women.
Well, it's pretty
because
weird
I don't
that
think
he wants
a woman his
kids.
Age would put up with the way he behaves.
Oh, of course not. 100%. That's the reason. He also says he wants to have kids and then dates a 27-year-old model. Like. Right. A 27-year-old model is not trying to have kids.
Right.
And I think it's just an immaturity on his part. And like also kind of like it's like when you pick the wrong person, like he says he wants kids, but then he knows he's not like capable. But then he did give the best advice to Luke. So I don't know.
You're showing the same behavior where you're like coming off like the puppy dog fun guy and still like never taking accountability that like deep down you actually have. Rage towards women.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't care. Why is he on the show? I don't care about his life at all. I don't mind him as a friend, and I don't mind Lala as a friend. Mm. I don't know. I think they needed more. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of characters on the show, so it's surprising I would say that. I mean, Jasmine and her fiance seem to be giving absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
So it's like they're kind of like friend, I guess. But they really need more people on the show. It doesn't seem like couples. I think Lacey and Jesse could be more prominent. I think Janet and Jason, oh my God, what was it this week I texted you that she was like, oh my God, if I have another baby, I'll be a geriatric. I was like, shut the fuck up.
Well, I feel like there's no context to that because she made it seem, I feel like she was making it seem like she had fertility issues. But then in the end, it felt like, oh, she was just assuming that because she's over 35, she'll have fertility issues, which as someone who had my first child right before 35 and then my second child at right before 40, like, that's offensive. Like,
she's just like, so like, what? Like, she's just so offensive. Like, she just says stupid shit like that all the time. She's just insufferable. Like, I was a defender of her for a while because people really hated her. And now I'm on team everyone. Like, I'm like, every time she's on, she like sucks the life out of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's not even necessary of her. It's just, she doesn't belong on the show. Nobody fucking likes her.
Well, I think Brittany. And then, I guess, like, does Brittany stay? Does she even make sense on the show?
The darkness in the valley. I didn't even put Brittany on the list because I was just like, God, can we even talk about that situation? Oh, my God. And it was so sad when she was talking about how the stuff with Jack she's just now realizing is affecting her child. And I was just like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
The sadness of that is just overwhelming.
Overwhelming.
Overwhelming that it's like I can't, like, it's just I want my Bravo to be a level of fun, and it just hearing that, it's just hearing your nonverbal, like, autistic son is affected by your abusive husband.
Like, I don't want to watch her date. Like, I don't want to go on that journey with her.
No, I
don't. Like,
either.
Feels too dark. Like, I need a therapist to go on that journey with her, not like a bunch of armchair psychologists.
I know.
On the internet. Like, I just.
I know. It's like unfortunate because we're getting such rich postpartum stories that I want to be a pro valley advocate, but the show is fucking dark. It's too dark.
I agree. Like, I really want to like it. Like, there are parts of it that I like. But there's so much of it that I don't know. I don't
even the
know.
Drag show. Like, I was excited to watch a drag show, but it was just so tinged. And oh my God, is Danny gonna like stab someone? Like, it just felt so tense. It was like, oh
my
God,
could Danny be like a murderer? Because I used to think that like maybe Jax could have been, like, if they weren't on TV, if all of that played out without like cameras, that maybe he would have murdered Brittany and Cruz. Like, I don't know.
Oh, should I tell the tea about Jax?
Yeah, tell the tea.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Okay, the tea.
Dropping some tea. We're going to do what is it called? A rage bait. No, is it a rage bait?
I know. Okay, this is just a rumor. Don't sue us. That Jack says herpes.
That barely seems like tea. Now that it's like, duh. Like,
and he was like giving it to everyone like first season.
I feel like there's probably something more darker sexually transmitted there, but
yeah.
Him and Brittany ever used condoms, remember? When they were dating.
I don't know. Well, it grosses me out.
Condoms, right? Like, didn't she like find some?
Can't think about Jax having sex.
Ugh.
And I met him too, and I fell for him. He snake charmed me.
He is a snake charmer.
No wonder he was spreading the herpes all around Los Angeles. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Don't
all of this is alleged. This is all for fun. I'm not posing as a therapist. Jenny is not posing as a historian. We're just here to spill some tea and.
It's just gossip. What was it? People were mad about the Dorit one, and they're like, it's just like you're just spreading gossip. And it's like, no shit.
It's like,
that's what's called gossip.
Yes, that is exactly what we are doing. We are just adding to the ethers of commentary and gossip and trying to have a good time. And we are supporting them because by the, like, in showbiz, no new, all bad
all
news.
Gossip is good gossip, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, so the valley is dark. I don't know how to fix it. It needs some serious fixing. I almost wonder if it's gonna come back.
Yeah, big question mark. And I wonder if it should. You know,
I don't
like,
think
it's part of me that's like maybe they need to scrap it and just keep the Shaws as the only valley.
It's kind of, I know, it's such a good spinoff for them. Like, it's created a good, like, seeing how they use that template for the city. Really smart, really seamless. I could see them doing it other places as well, because I think Couples is really interesting in it not being rooted in Housewives. But they need to do serious and I love Kristen. I want to keep seeing Kristen and Luke and their destructive relationship. But... and even Danny and Nia, yes, but they need to be a smaller part. Like, they're...
I feel like right now I can't support Danny. I can't. We can't platform him.
Well, we gotta give him a chance.
No.
Slam pig.
Slam pig. He's a slam pig.
So what do you gossip about? I mean, we saw the end of Summer House.
What do we think about Danielle being pregnant?
I mean, it was crazy in that premiere when she's like, I want to be pregnant next year. And then she made it happen. Like, Lindsay timeline.
Yeah.
I just don't.
It's interesting. Like, I feel like a lot of people are judging her because she, like, judged, you know, Lindsay about moving right in with Carl. And then, you know, then she judged her about getting pregnant right away.
But, like, now she's kind of doing those things. I don't understand that because she was right about all of it. So.
Yeah.
Lindsay was single mom. What I'm fascinated by is Lindsay's weird change of narrative. That she used to say, like, basically she made it seem like her and Turner agreed to break up, or that she broke up with Turner. But now all of a sudden the narrative is that Turner broke up with her. But then we got none of that story.
She is PRing the shit out of all of this, right? Like, she PRs whatever narrative makes her, like, get the attention or whatever empowers her in the moment is the P. Because even that now she's going back and being like, oh, I can't believe that Danielle gave Carl a hand job after we broke up, like, way, way, way long ago. Not the engagement.
Yeah,
like, when they
dating.
Went on the one sushi date. And it's like, well, Danielle actually dated Carl first. In the case PR. You didn't know, we are historians. We are historians.
The journalists. The journalism.
Yeah, we are journalists, and we're getting the facts straight.
I want to say we're trying to make nice with Lindsay Hubbard.
I do love Lindsay.
Yes. First of all, she's a quality reality star, and you see that. And I actually think that her becoming a mom really clarified that for when we talk about postpartum and this whole theme of the episode. I love that when women become moms, it really tunnel visions them at what they're good at and what they should do and what they're passionate about. And I feel like that happened for Lindsay. Mm-hmm. And I see Lindsay as almost like in totally complimentary terms, the level of, like, Bethany Frankel. Like, she is that level of, like, reality star. Like, I remember when Bethany, like, started her own talk show, and she was like, I realized I'm, like, not good at this because I'm really good at sharing my life and being a reality star. And, like, I feel that with Lindsay. And, I mean, the fact that she was able to bring her daughter onto the show, I think is a real coup for her. Like, I'm happy for her because she wanted to show that aspect of her life. And I have to say, her child, Gemma, is the most precious thing I've ever seen in my life. I love seeing
and
that side of her.
She is a little Lindsay. Like, she looks just like Lindsay.
Yes. And it's like, it's just so great when you get that kind of access, because you get to really open up layers of people. And so it really made me happy seeing that on The City. And I want Lindsay to love us again, though she never did. But, you know.
I don't think she knows us. She probably
doesn't know us. But, yeah. And I am still wanting to do a Kyle and Amanda.
Yes. I think after the reunion let's do it. I've started taking some notes and have some ideas of things I want to talk about around that.
Yeah. The City started. I really like that we're getting more of that on The City. That line he said of, like, you're hot because you're wearing a raincoat in the summer. It was the best line. I laughed
out
loud.
Coat, though.
I laughed out loud. It was amazing.
Ooh, a Danielle one would be good, too.
Danielle, yeah, I don't think we're getting enough of the story of, like, how she stole the guy from the wife.
Well,
well,
there's only been one episode.
Yeah,
so
we need
give
to
it some time.
I don't have a lot to say because I'm waiting to, like, learn more about that. I don't really understand why Lindsay's so mad at her, but I guess it's making good drama for The City. Yeah, I think the show is super promising. I'm more just confused on, like, who's going to be on Summer House, who's going to be on The City.
Just let it play out. Just let it be. Let it live.
The reality TV producers in me is like, is Summer House over? Because that's what happened to Vanderpump Rules, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So send in your thoughts on the Valley. Can it be resuscitated? That's all we got. See
y'all.
2 weeks.
rage out.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.